Yes, my name is Laurie Kubuitsile. I'm from Botswana. First of all, I just speak a moment about what I do, because I know, I think I can say confidently, none of you know me. And then after that, I want to speak about the ways in which African writers in Southern Africa, but actually throughout Africa, how we write differently and have different ways to get published than yourselves in UK and US. And then a little bit about the publishing industry in our area. And then if I have time, I might read a little bit of a short story just so you get some taste of my writing. I've been writing seriously for 7 years. I have 13 published books in Botswana and South Africa. I write for children. I've won, we have a prize in America for African children's writers called the Golden Baobab. It started last year, I won first position, and again this year, I won first position again. I also write for television. We have a television station in Botswana. I've written with my writing partner. I've written 2 television series. I also write detective novels and novellas and romance. And all of, like I said, my books are published by publishers in Botswana and in South Africa. If I can just maybe first of all speak about, I went to a session earlier this week about how to make a bestseller in UK and USA. And although I knew a lot of what they were speaking about, they spoke as if that was the norm throughout the world, and I just sat there thinking, okay, fine, that's the norm in your world, but it's not the norm in my world. Most African writers, like I'm sure the African writers that you know, don't have publishers on the continent. My publishers are on the continent. I of course I have a book with Macmillan, which is an international publisher, but it's South African Macmillan. So if I'm an African writer and I want to get my my book published in UK, I have to follow your procedure of getting an agent, and the agent will approach the publishers. But in Botswana and in South Africa, writers approach the publishers directly. We don't have agents. There's one agent in South Africa, but he doesn't do much. I know a friend of mine uses him. You don't need him. There's no need for him. And even once you get a publisher, even all contract negotiations, it's between you and the publisher. You don't have an agent, so you have to take care of your career yourself. You have to take care of your contracts yourself. Make sure you're getting paid your royalties properly. So this is good and bad. I mean, it's good in the sense that we don't have these gatekeepers, so many gatekeepers. It's bad in the sense that I have to be an expert on everything happening about books. Like I was explaining just now to this woman. Before I came to London, I got an acceptance for another romance. And straight away I read the contract, and already there's problems with e-books. Like I think you know it, with e-books now, the royalty rate is normally about 30%. Especially if the book is initially published as a print edition and then changed to ebook. But in Southern Africa, and this is a South African publisher, it's Kwela, which is, it's actually Sapphire, which is the imprint of Kwela. They want to give us 15%. So as a writer, straight away I have to be looking for all these areas where I need to start putting my boxing gloves and get to work. So that's kind of a bad aspect of it, because I think maybe once you have writers like yourselves in UK, when you have an agent, they're going to do all of that for you. So it's a good and bad situation. If I can just speak about Botswana, in Botswana we have no trade publishers, although most of them will pretend as if they're trade publishers. But when it comes to distribution, they are not trade publishers. They only sell books to the school market. And in actual fact, this is the case almost throughout Africa. The publishers make their money through the school's market. So you can imagine in the schools, there's a very small selection of fiction. Like myself, I write fiction, although I do proper educational publishing because I used to be a teacher. But for fiction, like for example in Botswana, there is a novel, a popular fiction, for junior secondary for example, popular fiction novel, one. Classic novel, one. Short story collection, one. So for imagine how, I mean, okay, we have a small population, 1.8 million people. But these are the only markets you're going to have if you're going to intend to make any income from your writing. These three little slots. So it's a problem. This is why I don't know if any of you can mention a writer, a Motswana writer or poet. Could you maybe raise your hand and tell me? Yeah, it's because if you're a writer in Botswana, it's so frustrating because you know that you're going to write and you won't find a trade publisher, that your book will not get in the bookstores, which again are very limited, and there'll be no distribution outside of the continent, and it's only going to be in the schools. Like if I can give an example, this is a novella. It's the first book. I have a novella series of four books. This book was published in 2005. And from 2005 until 2009, my publisher was attempting to sell them in the shop. We have, let me say, three bookshops in Habaroni, which is our capital. And one is hanging on by the skin of their teeth. The other two are chain stores from South Africa. Trying to sell, from 2005 until 2009, this book sold 87 copies. This is the trade market. In 2009, it was chosen as a prescribed book for junior secondary school. Last year, it sold 22,000 copies. So you can see, if I was a writer who only depended on the trade market, I couldn't make enough money to feed my cats. I would be in serious trouble. So yeah, in Botswana it's a problem. And because of that, I think, I mean, of course, if there's no trade publishers and there's no market for your books, it's very difficult to develop writers. I mean, we have so many people who have aspirations to be writers, and it's so difficult for them to develop in any way. And this is actually the case in, I know from speaking to publishers, for example, in other African countries, Botswana is worse because our population is very small. Other countries, it might be a bit better, but it's the same situation, except for South Africa. Us, we're lucky because we're close to South Africa. South Africa actually does have a trade market. They have publishers that publish to a trade market. There are bookshops, and slowly, like myself, because I am actually making my entire income from fiction now. You need to get into South Africa, or like, you know, all the writers that you likely know from Africa, all have publishers in UK or US. In South Africa, still, even writers who are the best sellers in South Africa find it very difficult to live on their royalties. I mean, before books like, I don't know if you know the Spud books. Do you know Spud books from South Africa? Oh, okay, then the situation is worse than I thought. Anyway, they're books for kids, and his series, I think there are three books. It's about a boy in boarding school. The first one has been made into a movie with one of your big actors, this John Cleese. He's like that. It's about a boy in boarding school. Before the Spud books, I mean, a bestseller in South Africa was about 4,000 copies. So, I mean, you can't live on the royalties from 4,000 copies per year. It's very small. So still, even in South Africa, the trade market is very small. I just want to mention just briefly these books, because they've been getting a lot of hype And even I was quite proud because this book was just the cover was on the BBC website a few weeks ago. These are romance novellas. I mean, when you speak about Africa, and especially like I can say in Botswana or in Southern Africa, everybody says, "Ah, Botswana, they don't read. Botswana don't read. This is the whole problem. They don't read. They don't buy books. So it's just a waste of time." It's a lie that. You know, there are things that are repeated over and over that people tend to take as the truth, and unfortunately that's one of them. Because you'll find a Motswana, because we have a lot of national news, we have a lot of newspapers actually. They buy a newspaper, they'll read that newspaper from the first page to the last as if they're going to take an exam on it. You know, it's very, I mean, people read, and they're desperate to read actually. But the problem is books are prohibitively expensive. Like I can say, for example, this book, I saw it before I left in Habroni. It's being sold for 250 pula. And I can say like the minimum wage is about 800 pula in Botswana. A starting teacher makes maybe about 3,000 pula. So imagine you have that kind of salary and the book is 250 pula at the shop. I mean, even me, a writer who reads books like a rabbit, you know, I would have to think before I bought a 250 pula book. And so one thing that's very exciting, like I said, are these books. They're being published by quite a respectable publisher in South Africa called Kwela Books. They do sort of literary publishing. But they've made an imprint called Sapphire Books. There's this one and there's another. There are two companies that are doing this. I'll talk only about this one because it's the one I write for. These books are novella length, you can see, which is about 30,000 words. And they're targeted for a young, black, urban audience. And they are cheap. You can buy these books for 45 rands. So they're cheap enough that people in Botswana, I think, is about 40 pula, because the pula is a bit stronger than the rand. And they're getting a lot of, they're fast-paced plot. Like both of these are mine are sort of romance mystery mixed up. And they were marketed in an interesting way. They were, instead of marketing like a normal trade book, they were marketed through a woman's magazine. Like Valentine's Day, one was given away free inside of a magazine. So they're getting a lot of hype. They're getting a lot of new readers, new people buying books. And even though like, they're targeted for a black market. I had an email from a white Afrikaner woman in South Africa, a young woman. Anyway, she wasn't even that young, I think. I think she was in her 30s. And it was the first book, it was this one, Can He Be the One? It was the first book she ever finished. The first book she ever finished. And I thought that was so fabulous. I mean, I think these books are so important because even when I first started writing, like I said, this was the first I've had plenty of short stories published, but this was the first book that I published. And when I went to Macmillan with this book, when they said they wanted the book, I told them, please, you know, this is a fast-paced detective novel. It could be marketed in this way. Almost how these are now being marketed 10 years later. Oh yeah, Laurie, we're going to market it like that. Okay, give it to Macmillan, nothing happens. So that's why the next one in the series, which is this one, Macmillan wanted, I said, no, I'm not going to you now. I'm trying somebody else who might do what I want them to do. And I went to a local publisher owned by Motswana. I said, okay, Ray, this is what I want. This is what, yeah, Laurie, we're going to do it. I gave him this one. I don't even know how many it sold. Last year I had 900 pula royalty, so maybe it's about 90. Yeah. So to a trade market, you're going to have a problem unless you learn an interesting way to market. And these are very exciting. I mean, I know people like to poo-poo on romance, but anyway, I like romance. And I mean, I do write literary. I have literary short stories, and I write novels and things. But I write everything because that's where my interest is. But yeah, so these are very exciting. If anybody who's interested in African writing should pay attention to what's happening in Southern Africa. There's something very exciting happening. I'm speaking kind of fast, I think. Anyway, okay, so I think what I'll do is let you ask some questions, and then after that, if we have a little bit of time, I'll just read a little bit of a short story of mine, just so you can get an idea of if I'm a poser or if I'm a real writer. So maybe any questions? Oh my.
I have a question. I know this one from there, the mother's from there, so I understand the bookshop. There's only one bookshop in the shopping mall. So sometimes when I go on holiday, I go there and buy a book. But how does that, I was asking about the First Lady Detective. Because being on Botswana, here, when people started reading that book, it was all, wow, Botswana is an exciting place. You know, are there any other writers there? Has that book brought some spotlight to the writers in Botswana, or has it taken away from your book?
Yeah, I mean, there's such, among Botswana, there's really controversy about Alexander McCall Smith. Myself, personally, I think he's done a lot for the country, because you know Botswana, a lot of people don't know it, they think it's part of South Africa, you know, they don't really know it's a country. So Alexander McCall Smith has done a lot for the country itself. In terms of taking away our market, since we have no market, I don't think that he took anything from us. He did for a while, I think it was only 2 years, he was working with British Council, and there was quite a lucrative short story prize for 2 years that he sponsored. First prize was 10,000 pula. Okay. So that was a good thing. And then he disappeared, I don't know for what reason. I wish he'd come back with his pile of money. But the only thing that I have a small issue with is that we do, we have people like Bessie Head. Do you know Bessie Head? You don't know Bessie Head even? Oh my gosh. Bessie Head. Bessie Head is she's a fabulous writer. So she's wrote books like Question of Power, which is studied by university, especially women's studies people around the world. We do have writers in Botswana. And Bessie Head was quite famous before, she was our big writer before Alexander McCall Smith came along, and now we don't know about Bessie Head, I guess. But what I don't like, what I was going to say, you know, I don't know which bookstore, you're talking about exclusive books in Riverwalk.
In the old shopping mall.
Okay, yeah. That one, I mean, that's the one I'm saying, it's an independent bookstore and it's really holding on for dear life. It's really on its last legs. But even like at exclusive books, this is the case actually, I can say actually, because I went to a bookstore here in London, that it's different, at least the bookstore I went to at South Bank. But in Botswana and even in South Africa, you go into a bookshop, like exclusive books, and it's all foreign titles, huge displays of foreign titles, and then like exclusive, I know the layout perfect, because I'm sort of a guerrilla bookshop visitor in Botswana, because you walk in, and this side, there's a religion books, I don't know what that's all about, and then if you go behind there, that's where you'll find African books from other countries. And you won't get like I just bought this new book for Brian Chibaba here. I can't get that book in Botswana. You'll find like a dusty copy of Famished Road and maybe Nervous Conditions. And then, you know, there'll be some picture books about the Okavango Delta. And then, like in the very side corner, all of them spine out until Makubisile comes, because I change all of the books like this, but all spine out. There'll be a little section of the Botswana writers. And you have to push through spider webs and everything. So it's so difficult to sell books in there. I mean, you know, and so, but then next to there will be a huge display of Alexander McCall Smith. So even if somebody wanted to look for Makubisile's books, I mean, your eyes, are you going to see this? Or are you going to see number one ladies detective, you know, display with hundreds of cover out books? I mean, so.
I agree with the price of books in South Africa, the books are expensive. I was surprised.
Shockingly.
When you compare it here, when the books are very cheap.
Since now I just bought 3 books, I think my count is at 25 books I've bought since I've been here, because it's so much cheaper.
Yeah.
Really, honestly. Buying books in Botswana is tough. Any other questions?
Has Amazon, selling online changed anything?
And I didn't talk about this. Well, first of all, in Botswana, no publisher publishes online. I mean, I've talked, there is a problem with PayPal in Botswana. You can only pay out. You can't receive money. Like, for example, I have a blog. I get about 150 visitors every day. So I've been thinking about selling a collection of my short stories as an ebook on my blog. But you can't use PayPal. So you have to use something like maybe ClickBank. And people are not very, they want to be something that's very trustworthy, and they all trust him. So that straight away stops online selling in Botswana for now. In South Africa, books are sold online. I know, like this book, which I might speak about later. This is a collection of short stories. It's women from Southern Africa. This publisher, it's called Mojaji Books. Mojaji is, I think it's Venda. I don't know if anybody's from South Africa here. It's a word for the rain queen in South Africa. And this she's an independent publisher, the woman who runs this. And this collection, in fact, I have a story inside, but I'm also the compiler, meaning I'm the one who chose the stories that are inside. This book you can get online. And I understand there was even a launch, because some of the contributors in here are actually citizens of countries in Southern Africa, but they live in London. And they had a launch here in London. So this book you can even buy in the shops, but you can buy it online. These romances now are starting to be sold online. Otherwise, for my book, this book, I don't know if anybody knows about this book. This is kind of an exciting little book. Okay, this is again a collection of short stories, but the writer, this is a Nigerian writer who made an office on the internet in Zoetrope. And then he invited writers that he knew to join that private office. And then we each contributed stories, and then we critiqued the stories, edited the stories ourselves. And then we put the book together. By that time, there were some of the writers like Ovo and Molara Wood, who's a Nigerian writer. Do you know him? She lived in London for a long time. She was an arts journalist in London, but she's back in Nigeria right now. They took it to a publisher, New Internationalist. And it was published, and it's getting launched. Like, especially in America, I get letters all the time from America. Students who are studying my story, they want to know about it. This is sold online, and I think it's quite fabulous how the writers came together. Like, since I've been here, one of the writers is Vanessa Gebbi. Do you know her? She's an award-winning writer in UK, and she's going to have she's published some short story collections. She's going to have a novel published soon. I met her in the flesh since I've been in London, so that was quite wonderful. Yeah, so this is an exciting project that I was involved in. You can buy that online, but. Any other questions?
I think it's obviously quite disappointing that books are becoming so inaccessible to many people, like you said. And I wondered what the impact has been on like writing itself. I mean, it's a creative writing workshop, but in terms of people writing for pleasure or writing just as a form of creative expression, mm-hmm. or for raising awareness, blogging, what impact are the forms of not just writing to get published, and to obviously, if you're very talented, if you sort of have a good relationship with publishers and that kind of thing, I suppose that is obviously going to be in your favor. But just generally speaking about writing, how has that affected people who are interested in writing and would like to write, but not necessarily to make a living out of it? Because I imagine that a lot of people might have their main jobs or what they do, yes. and have writing as as a hobby, which is not ideal, obviously.
It's okay.
More serious.
Yeah, there's all kinds of writers. It's okay. Yeah. I mean, it has an impact in the sense that to get published, you know, you're going to face this wall. I can speak a little bit about poetry. Like Botswana, like many African countries, and I think it might be worldwide, I don't know, but I know in South Africa and Botswana, performance poetry is just exploding. It's really, I mean, we have some just amazing performance poets. And so for poetry, a lot of Botswana are writing poetry. And very, we have a very quite well-known, internationally well-known performance poet, TJ Dama. You know her. Oh, thank you. Yeah, she's wonderful. Actually, she's the chairperson of our Writers Association, and I'm the vice chair, so she's even quite a good friend of mine. And she's very good. We also have other poets, I mean, more sort of printed poets, like Barlow Saboni. He's a lecturer at the university. He was just in Italy for a festival. So poetry, because people come and listen, and people are putting on CDs, you know, for themselves, and selling. Like we have someone called Andrea Chuma, who also is quite doing quite well for herself. She made CDs herself of her performing her poetry. So people are finding ways to express themselves, and. Also, people are kind of good and bad. They're sort of resorting to self-publishing. Like myself, I write a weekly column for one of the national newspapers about writing and books. And there was a woman who called me, I think maybe the very week before I left. And she was saying, oh, Laurie, you know, I have two publishers who want to publish my book in USA. And I was sort of surprised, you know? And then I said, oh, that's good. Can I send you the contracts? I said, yeah, you can send me the contracts. One of them was a company called Raider, which is a POD that you must pop out 6,000, something like 7,000 pula, and then they make your book, and then people must order, and then you get some royalties. You know, it's kind of not a scam necessarily, but a scam in the sense they were trying to pretend they were a proper publisher, but in actual fact, they were a POD. The other one was just... a straight like vanity, you were basically self-publishing because she couldn't get a quote from them. And so a lot of that happens. And a lot of what I try to address in my column is how you can self-publish yourself in Botswana. You don't have to go to America and get Raider to steal your, let me not say steal, take, pay, you know, give your money to an American company. You can do it right in Botswana. And I do have a good friend, like I have these short story collections I wrote with a woman I write with quite often, Wami Molefe. And another children's writer called Bontikani Botunile. Anybody know her? Bontikani. Because Bonti also, she's a self-published children's writer. She writes about Setswana traditional tales, but in a very interesting manner. And when she launches her book, she has a group of unemployed youth that she trains, and they put together a musical of her book. They're just fabulous. They're really fabulous. And she does very well. I mean, her first book sold 2,000 copies she sells a lot in Maun, which is in the tourist area of Botswana, and a lot of tourists buy. But she's even been, she was invited to America to perform their musical. So I think, like I always advocate in my column, you know, listen, if we can't pub, you know, you call it, you send a query to an agent in UK that's thinking, oh, who's this person in Botswana? They don't want to listen to us. And in South Africa also, it's tough to get published. Then you must self-publish, because there's no need to give a book that's not going to, like, for example, Murder for Profit, my book, give it to a local publisher and it just sits there. So, you know, yeah, there are people who write for fun or just to express themselves and to perform, like at poetry nights. But I think most people write fiction, novels, they at least want to see some book in the end. Yeah, and we do have, like the Writers Association, we publish a literary magazine. So we do publish short stories from people who are, you know, not full-time writers. So there are, and we're trying to do more of that.
Other questions? Since a question, but I just want to add on to what you said.
Yeah.
I write a short story that I'm from Uganda, and as a writer, you always feel, yes, you can just write for fun to express yourself, but the ultimate is you want to be read.
Yes.
You want to have it there. And that's why it's so good to have a published book in an anthology or a collection.
Yeah. And I think because in Botswana, internet has been quite expensive until recently. There's this whole big new African cable underground, this ocean and all this, and it's becoming a bit cheaper. Not a lot of people blog. There are a few. And I feel like for African writers in general, because for example, I was recently interviewed by a Ghanaian magazine, and a story of mine is going to be in Ghana. And it's very difficult for me to get a book from a Ugandan writer in Botswana. I had to come to London to buy books from, you know, Chris Abani's book I bought at that place and South Bank. I can't get that book in Botswana. So me, I'm very hopeful about e-books. I think e-books are going to be fabulous for African writers. If only our publishers can sort themselves out and PayPal can sort itself out. But I think it's going to solve so many of our problems. Because, you know, there was a very exciting thing last year at the Cape Town Book Fair. The German sponsored a whole section of the exhibit floor for small African publishers from around the continent. And prior to the fair, they conducted workshops for those small independent African publishers. And they discussed, because my friend Bonti, the one I was just speaking about, she's a self-publisher, but she has a company called Tarienzo. And so she was in there, so she told me. They discussed how can we work together, and how can we work together to get our books distributed around the continent. I mean, we don't even necessarily need Europe. There's just this whole idea that, you know, if you're a successful writer, your book is on a shelf in London, which is madness, because there's plenty of readers in Africa, and if we could only get the distribution sorted out in Africa, you know, we'd be fine. And we wouldn't have to write the stories that, unfortunately, everyone outside Africa wants us to write, you know, the poor, sad African stories, which I'm up to here with, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, we have all kinds of stories, and they should be allowed to flourish. Mm. So I think e-books are going to be, hopefully, wonderful for us. Any other questions? Okay, maybe I can just read a little bit of a short story. Is that okay? Okay. Like I said, this book is from Mojaji Books. She's a fabulous publisher for many reasons. One of the reasons is she publishes poetry books, which is very, and she actually, they make money, and they win awards and things, and and she publishes collections of short stories. These two very difficult categories, but only for women from Southern Africa, so if you have friends. And this one, we had a theme. The theme was bed, and so everybody submitted a story about bed. Okay, mine is called, and like I said, I have a story in here, but I was also the compiler. Mine is called In the Spirit of McPhineas Latta. Can you hear me? The tale begins at the end. McPhineas Latta, the perennial bachelor who made a vocation of troubling married women, is dead. The air above Nokanyana village quivers with grief and rage, and not a small amount of joy, because the troubling of married women, by its definition, involved a lot of trouble. But maybe because of his slippery personality or an inordinate amount of blind love, McPhineas Latta seemed to dodge the bulk of the trouble created by his behavior and left it for the others to carry on his behalf. He had, after all, admitted to Bongo and Cliff, his left and right sidekicks, that troubling married women was a perfect pastime, which was all sweet and no sweat. Women in the village of Nokanyana, named after a small river that no one had yet been able to discover, were notoriously greedy and without exception surly. Husbands in the village were all small and thin, with tight muscles worked into knots because they spent all of their lives either working to please their wives or withstanding barrages of insults and criticisms for failing to do it up to the very high expectation of Nokanyana women. For Nokanyana men, it was a lose-lose situation, and as a result, each and every one of them despised McPhineas Latta merely for remaining single. He had made the right decision, and they had not. McPhineas Latta, though thus despised by most husbands, was adored by most wives. His funeral was full of dramatic fainting and howls of grief echoing as far as the Ditako Hills. Tears fell by the bucketful and nearly succeeded in creating the village's missing namesake. The husband stood at the back of the gathering wearing variations on the theme, stern face, while the minister said his last words. When it was time to pour dirt on the coffin of McPhineas Lata, the husbands rushed past their crying wives and grabbed up the shovels. Some even came prepared with their own to make the work faster. Indeed, no one could remember a burial that had lasted for so short a time. No sooner had the wives heard that first shovelful of soil hit against the wooden coffin, as they were still organizing themselves for their final grand crescendo of wailing, than the soil was seen to be heaped into a great mound over the grave. The men then piled stones on top of a great number, sure to keep McPhineas Lata firmly in his eternal bed. The men stacked the shovels by the grave, slapped the soil off their hands, and led the way back to the village, leaving all of their McPhineas Lata problems in the cemetery for good, or so they thought. As the husbands made their happy ways to Emarengwe Bar, Matabobo, one of McPhineas's greatest fans, lingered behind, looking longingly at McPhineas Lata's grave. She wondered how the women of Nokanyana would manage without such a talented man. She also wondered what the women would do with all of their spare time. There was only so much husband haranguing a woman could stand. She thought about how much she personally would miss McPhineas Lata, and without so much as a warning, her mind floated away into McPhineas Lata land. Naledi Hulela stopped down the thin lane leading from the cemetery to the village and looked back at McPhineas Lata's grave and spotted Matabobo. "What does she think she's doing?" she asked with indignation. The wives stopped and turned to see Matabobo lying on top of McPhineas Lata's grave. "She can't do that," Naledi said. She felt quite proprietal over McPhineas Lata, since he had died in her bed in the middle of one of his more gymnastically performed sessions. It really had been quite extraordinary what he could get up to. People said he read books. I think that's enough.